Welcome to episode 535 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. I'm Peter Anderson. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. This is day two of our new 12-part series entitled The 12 Days of Christmas. John 1 verses 1 to 2. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. Verse 14. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. The Latin verb incarnar means to make flesh. When we say that Jesus Christ is God incarnate, we mean that the Son of God took on a fleshy, bodily form. However, when this happened in the womb of Mary, Jesus' earthly mother, he did not stop being divine. Although Jesus became fully human, he retained his status as God. How Jesus is able to be both man and God simultaneously is one of the great mysteries of Christianity, but the Apostle John tells us that believing that is a test of the genuineness of our faith. Jesus has two distinct natures, divine and human. He himself said in John 14 verse 11, "Believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me." The Bible clearly teaches the deity of Christ by presenting his fulfillment of numerous Old Testament prophecies. His eternal existence, his miraculous virgin birth, his miracles, his authority to forgive sin, his acceptance of worship, his ability to predict the future, and his resurrection from the dead. The writer of Hebrews tells us that Jesus is superior to angels, and angels are to worship him. The Bible also teaches the incarnation. Jesus became fully human by taking on human flesh. Jesus was conceived in the womb and was born. He experienced normal aging. He had natural physical needs and human emotions. He learned. He died a physical death, and he was resurrected with a physical body that was scarred and bruised and that could be touched. Jesus was human in every way except for sin. He lived a completely sinless life. When Christ took on the form of a human, his nature did not change, but his position did. Jesus, in his original nature of God in spirit form, humbled himself by laying aside his glory and privileges. God can never stop being God because he is immutable and infinite. If Jesus stopped being fully God for even a split second, all life would die. The doctrine of the incarnation says that Jesus, while remaining fully God, became fully man. Jesus had to be born as a human being for several reasons. One is outlined in Galatians 4 verses 4 to 5. But when the time had fully come, God sent his Son, born of a woman, born under law, to redeem those under law, that we might receive the full rights of sons. Only a man could be born under the law. No animal or angelic being is under the law. Only humans are born under the law, and only a human being could redeem other human beings born under the same law. Born under the law of God, all humans are guilty of transgressing that law. Only a perfect human, Jesus Christ, could perfectly keep the law and perfectly fulfill the law, thereby redeeming us from that guilt. Jesus accomplished our redemption on the cross, exchanging our sin for his perfect righteousness. Another reason Jesus had to be fully human is that God established the necessity of the shedding of blood for the remission of sins. The blood of animals, though acceptable on a temporary basis as a foreshadowing of the blood of the perfect God-man, was insufficient for the permanent remission of sin because according to Hebrews 10 verse 4, it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. Jesus Christ, the perfect Lamb of God, sacrificed his human life and shed his human blood to cover the sins of all who would ever believe in him. If he were not human, this would have been impossible. Furthermore, the humanity of Jesus enables him to relate to us in a way that angels or animals never can. Hebrews 4 verse 15, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet without sin." Only a human could sympathize with our weaknesses and temptations. In his humanity, Jesus was subjected to all the same kinds of trials that we are, and he is therefore able to sympathize with us and to aid us. He was tempted. He was persecuted. He was poor. He was despised. He suffered physical pain, and he endured the sorrows of a lingering and most cruel death. Only a human being could experience these things, and only a human being could fully understand them through experience. Theologian R.C. Sproul once said, "What we celebrate at Christmas is not so much the birth of a baby, as important as that is, but what's so significant about the birth of that particular baby is that in this birth, we have the incarnation of God himself." But of the billions who celebrate Christmas in all parts of the globe, how many actually think about the incarnation, about God coming in the flesh? To the least, the last, and the lost, there is good news that Jesus, God himself, came and lived a perfect life and died the sinner's death. That perfect life and that perfect death can be exchanged for mine and for yours. And that exchange can make life to the full possible for eternity. That's not just good tidings. That's awesome. That's incredible. This is what we ought to celebrate at Christmas. But this is what the world seems to have forgotten. Americans have been among the most ardent promoters of Christmas. But while the number of Americans who celebrate Christmas remains high, the religious aspects of the holiday are in decline. A recent Pew Research Center's survey found that not only are some of the more religious aspects of Christmas less prominent in the public sphere, but there are signs that they are on the wane in Americans' private lives and personal beliefs as well. For instance, there's been a noticeable decline in the percentage of U.S. adults who say they believe that biblical elements of the Christmas story, that Jesus was born to a virgin, for example, reflect historical events that actually occurred. Millions of non-Christians have caught the holiday spirit and celebrate Christmas around the world. What does it mean to them? Consider this snapshot of Christmas in Japan. Sending and receiving Christmas cards and presents are popular. Christmas Eve is thought of as a romantic day in which couples spend time together and exchange presents. In many ways, it resembles Valentine's Day celebrations in the UK and the US. Young couples like to go for walks to look at the Christmas lights and have a romantic meal in a restaurant. How are you celebrating Christmas this year? Where do your priorities lie? In your words and actions, are you affirming your belief in and appreciation for the incarnation? Or are you following along with the commercialized pagan practices of the world? The incarnation of Christ, his willingness to live this physical life, to deeply understand and empathize with our sufferings, and to give his very life for each of us, is awesome and encouraging. It should motivate us to respond. And what does he expect in response? Not material gifts or even a day of celebration, but rather the gifts of our hearts. Father, thank you that the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. May we respond by giving our hearts to you. That's our episode. Remember that God calls you not only to live, but to thrive. Live life to the full today.